a number of the different books, well, all of the books of the Bible, at least the Old Testament so far, about a week at a time, and we are going to look at the book of Ruth this morning. So you can turn to the book of Ruth, and we will consider the Cinderella story of our Bibles. All right, just by way of introduction, the book of Ruth is titled both in the Hebrew Old Testament and in the Septuagint, Ruth, after obviously one of the major characters of the book. The dates of the book of Ruth take place probably somewhere between 1126 and 1105 BC. Now, I'm going to ask you to put on your remembering caps, and I'm going to ask, where does this put us in Bible history? What era, what time period is this in? Does anybody remember? What's that? Pre-Babylon, okay. What's that? Judges. Very good. Look at Ruth. Look at Ruth chapter 1, verse 1. Now it came about in the days when the judges governed. Now remember, what is the spiritual condition of the nation in the days that the judges governed? Yes, Tom gives us a good... right? It is not good. What is characteristic of the nation in those days? Every man did what was right in his own eyes, right? And then God consistently has to bring in an oppressing nation, an oppressing group, and hold some of the people down and rule them with an iron fist and be really mean. And then the people go, oh, this is no good. God save us. And then God says, okay, and sends a judge, and the judge delivers. Usually the people follow the Lord for the lifespan of the judge, and then the judge dies, and sometimes maybe his advisors die, and then the people go back to worshiping other gods and different things like that. And so you have the judges cycle. And it just goes, and it, not only does it go around and around and around and around, but really they should call it the judges spiral. Remember we talked about that, because it gets worse and worse and worse and worse. And it seems that this possibly takes place during the Midianite oppression. Here's why we think that. We see that it's in the time of Judges, from chapter 1, verse 1. And we see that there was a famine in the land, and that a certain man of Bethlehem in Judah went to sojourn in the land of Moab with his wife and two sons. So they have left the land because there is famine. And what we see then in verse 6 of chapter 1 is she arises. This is Naomi, who, by the way, a very good case could be made for Naomi being the main character of the book of Ruth. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But Naomi decides to go back because the Lord had visited the people in giving them food. Now look at Judges chapter 6. And we might see why there was a famine in the land, or we see at least one time when there was a famine in the land, and one time that the Lord visits the people and brings food. In Judges chapter 6, verse 1, it says, "The sons of Israel did what was evil in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord gave them into the hands of Midian for 7 years. The power of Midian prevailed against Israel. Because of Midian, the sons of Israel made for themselves the dens which were in the mountains and the caves and the strongholds. For it was when Israel had sown that the Midianites would come up with the Amalekites and the sons of the east and go against them. So they would camp against them and destroy the produce of the earth as far as Gaza and leave no sustenance in Israel, as well as no sheep, ox, or donkey. For they would come up with their livestock and their tents, and they would come in like locusts in number. Both they and their camels were innumerable, and they came into the land to devastate it. So Israel was brought very low because of Midian, and the sons of Israel cried out to the Lord." So what we see there is that it's very possible that Naomi and her family moved out of Israel because of the Midianite oppression. And that when the Lord delivered through Gideon, that they were able to move back because there was food in the land again. But that gives us at least a little bit of the historical background and even the spiritual background of the nation Israel at that time. We're going to see that Ruth and Naomi are going to be, and Boaz, all three of our main characters, are going to be the exceptions to the rule, apparently. They are godly individuals, it appears, and we'll take a look at how all of that unfolds in a little bit. The purpose of the book, we see that Yahweh, sovereignly but in a hidden way, effected the birth of his king through the actions of his people. Okay, so we're going to see God sovereignly at work to bring about some pretty spectacular things. And we have a couple of things we could name as themes. First of all, the word kinsman redeemer, or the concept of kinsman redeemer, it's the Hebrew word goel. Not that that means anything to you, but I thought you might like to know. It's the Hebrew word goel. And as we read it, I'm going to read the whole book this morning because I was going to like try and walk you through the major plot points, but it's like four chapters, so it's just easier to read the whole thing. But look for the word near relative or close relative. In the New American Standard, that's how they've translated this word goel on a fairly regular basis. So look for close relative or near relative, and then also just the concept of redeemer. And as I alluded to before, you could call the story of God's Cinderella. We're going to see a rags to riches story, and we're going to see that it's not because of a fairy godmother, but because of the God of the universe that Cinderella goes from rags to riches. By way of outline, chapter 1 outlines the ruin, chapter 2, the restoration, chapter 3, we have a little romance, and in chapter 4, we have redemption accomplished. So, just to outline, like I said, we're going to read the book of Ruth this morning together. Just to outline a few of the key individuals, here are people that you are looking for. Watch for their character, watch for the things that the narrative says about them, and watch for how that plays out in the way that they go about things. First, we're going to see Naomi. She is a godly Jewess, and she becomes the main driving character of the book. At every point of action, at every turning point in the book, Naomi is the focal point. We also see she is the first person mentioned and the last person mentioned, and we see that it's actually her redemption that's accomplished. Okay, so look at chapter 1, verse 1. I'll just leave it. I know you all know the story, but I don't want to give away the way the plot twists and turns and the tensions and the resolution and all of that. But you'll note that she's at the center of the story in reality. She is the, literally speaking, she's the main character. She's the driving character. Ruth, we're going to see, is a Gentile. She is a Moabitess convert. And she is a woman of excellent character. Do look at chapter 3, verse 11. This doesn't give away any of the plot or anything like that. Chapter 3, verse 11. Now, in the Hebrew Bible, in some very popular organizations of the Hebrew Bible, the book of Ruth comes immediately after the book of Proverbs. Now, you'll remember, how does Proverbs close? The excellent woman, right? The description of the excellent woman. There is one person in Scripture who is called an excellent woman. And it is Ruth, here in chapter 3, verse 11. Now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you whatever you ask, for all my people in the city know that you are a woman of excellence. So if you want to see, it seems very probable that placing Ruth right after Proverbs was very purposeful. If you want to see what a woman of excellence looks like, how she conducts herself, then Ruth is a very good illustration of that, a very good example of that. And finally, we are going to see Boaz, who is a rich Israelite, and he is the Goel. He is the kinsman redeemer, the one who is in a position to make things right. And he is also, all three of these are godly individuals, as we're going to see. So let's look at the book of Ruth. I want to take some time to read through the book, and then we'll go back and develop some of the major themes that you should have seen coming through, and then we'll draw everything to a conclusion. So the book of Ruth. Now it came about in the days when the judges governed that there was a famine in the land. And a certain man of Bethlehem in Judah went to sojourn in the land of Moab with his wife and two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of the wife, Naomi. And the name of the two sons were Mahlon and Chilion, Ephrathites of Bethlehem in Judah. Now they entered the land of Moab and remained there. Then Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons. They took for themselves Moabite women as wives. The name of one was Orpah, and the name of the other, Ruth. And they lived there about 10 years. Then both Mahlon and Chilion died, and the woman was bereft of her two children and her husband. Now, who is the major character here? Who's the driving force, just to take note of this? Naomi, right? Who's bereft of her two children and her husband? Naomi, right? Now, at this point, we have to remember how important this is in Israel. All right? How do the people of Israel participate in the promises of God? What is one of the major promises of the Lord to the nation Israel? That you'll have land, right? What do you have to have in order for your family to participate, continue to participate in that promise of the Lord? There have to be heirs, right? You need heirs. I'm glad you saw that. You need someone to take possession of the land that's been allotted to you and to your family. So for the Israelites to not have an heir is to not have a place in the promise of God in a very real sense, in the promises of the Lord. So this goes above and beyond as difficult and heartbreaking and all of that as it can be to lose children and lose family or not have children, be without children today. It is that plus all the more in Old Testament Israel. So this places Naomi in a very in an awful place, in a very difficult place. So just keep that in mind as we go, and the importance in Israel of having an heir, particularly as that pertains to having a part in the promises of God. So she is bereft of her children and her husband. She is essentially alone in the world, except for her daughters-in-law. Then she arose with her daughters-in-law that she might return from the land of Moab. For she had heard in the land of Moab that the Lord had visited his people in giving them food. So she departed from the place where she was and her two daughters-in-law with her. And they went on the way to return to the land of Judah. And Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go, return each of you to her mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. May the Lord grant you, that you may find rest each in the house of her husband." And then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voices and wept. And they said to her, "No, we will surely return with you to your people." But Naomi said, "Return, my daughters. Why should you go with me? Have I yet sons in my womb, that they may be your husbands? Return, my daughters, go, for I am too old to have a husband. If I said I have hope, if I should even have a husband tonight and also bear sons, would you therefore wait until they were grown? Would you therefore refrain from marrying? No, my daughters, for it is harder for me than for you, for the hand of the Lord has gone forth against me." And they have lifted up their voices and wept again. And Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. Then she said, behold, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law. But Ruth said, do not urge me to leave you or turn back from following you. For where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. Thus may the Lord do to me, and worse, if anything but death parts you and me. When she saw that she was determined to go with her, she said no more to her. Excuse me. So Naomi tries to send her daughters-in-law away because Naomi has no way to provide for them. Excuse me. No younger sons to give to them as husbands. No way to provide children or provision or blessing or home or anything like that for them. Orpah goes, and Ruth refuses to go and says she's going to follow Naomi and be faithful to her. So they both went until they came to Bethlehem. And it came about when they had come to Bethlehem that all the city was stirred because of them. And the women said, is this Naomi? And Naomi said to them, do not call me Naomi, call me Mara. For the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. The name Mara means bitter. I went out full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why do you call me Naomi, since the Lord has witnessed against me, and the Almighty has afflicted me? So Naomi returned with her daughter, Naomi returned, and with her, Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, who returned from the land of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of barley harvest. So they've come back to Israel, or Naomi's come back to Israel, and Ruth has followed her back. But we see that they are in a destitute position, essentially, at this point. They have no real way of making a living. They have no way of producing heirs, moving this line along. So we have the ruin of these two women, essentially. But in chapter 2, we're going to see a restoration take place. Now, Naomi had a kinsman of her husband, a man of great wealth, of the family of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, please let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after one in whose sight I may find favor. And she said to her, go, my daughter. So she departed and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to the portion of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. Part of the Mosaic law was that when you harvested your crops, the stuff that fell to the ground and the stuff sort of on the edge of the field and different things like that, the farmers were to leave those things, leave those, like the little crumbs, the bits and pieces, so that those who were poor, those who were destitute, could come in behind the harvesters and pick up what was left over, pick up what had fallen to the ground and different things like that, so that they could subsist. It was the way that God set up welfare, essentially, in the nation Israel, was for the little bits and pieces that were left behind for the poor to be able to come in. And Ruth says to Naomi, let me go out and I'll work in the fields and I'll pick up what I can that's left over of the barley, and that way we'll have something to eat, and we'll be able to survive. So she goes out. She ends up, she just happened to come to the portion of the field that belonged to Boaz. Now behold, in verse 4, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said to the reapers, may the Lord be with you. And they said to him, may the Lord bless you. Then Boaz said to his servant who was in charge of the reapers, whose young woman is this? The servant in charge of the reapers replied, she is the young Moabite woman who returned with Naomi from the land of Moab. And she said, please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. Thus she came and has remained from the morning until now. And she has been sitting in the house for a little while. Then Boaz said to Ruth, "Listen carefully, my daughter. Do not go to glean in another field. Furthermore, do not go on from this one, but stay here with my maids. Let your eyes be on the fields which they reap, and go after them. Indeed, I have commanded the servants, do not touch you. When you are thirsty, go to the water jars and drink from what the servants draw." And she fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your sight, that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner?" Boaz replied to her, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law after the death of your husband has been fully reported to me, and how you left your father and your mother and the land of your birth and came to a people that you did not previously know. May the Lord reward your work and your wages be full from the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to seek refuge." And then she said, "I have found favor in your sight, my Lord, for you have comforted me. Indeed, have spoken kindly to your maidservant, though I am not like one of your maidservants." At mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come here, that you may eat of the bread and dip your piece of bread in the vinegar." So she sat beside the reapers, and he served her roasted grain. She ate and was satisfied, and had some left. When she rose to glean, Boaz commanded his servants, saying, "Let her glean, even among the sheaves, and do not insult her. Also, you shall purposely pull out for her some grain from the bundles and leave it that she may glean, and do not rebuke her." So she gleaned in the field until evening. Then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. So he tells him, don't just make her go behind the harvesters, the people who are picking. Let her come up into the stuff that hasn't been harvested. Let her get whatever she wants. And in fact, take some out of what you've picked and just kind of drop it on the ground behind you so that there's lots and lots for her to pick up and to grab a hold of and to take. And then she takes what she had picked up off the ground, and she went and did the farm things. She beat it out so that she could get the grain from the barley. And she took it up and went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. And she took it out and gave Naomi what she had left after she was satisfied. So she took the food from lunch. And her mother-in-law said to her, "Where did you glean today, and where did you work? May he who took notice of you be blessed." Obviously, she had come with a whole lot of grain. She'd come with a lot of barley. And Naomi, that's not lost on Naomi. She says, "Man, that's a lot." And it's clear to her that someone had looked upon her with favor, had provided for her. So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, "The name of the man with whom I work today is Boaz." Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "May he be blessed of the Lord, who has not withdrawn his kindness to the living and to the dead." Again, Naomi said to her, "The man is our relative, and he is one of our closest relatives." There you go. There's that close relative. Then Ruth the Moabitess said, "Furthermore, he said to me, 'You should stay close to my servants until they have finished all my harvest.'" Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It is good, my daughter, that you go out with his maids, so that the others do not fall upon you in another field." So she stayed close by the maids of Boaz in order to glean until the end of the barley harvest and the wheat harvest, and she lived with her mother-in-law. So there's a recognition, too, here that there's a certain danger for Ruth in all of this. She is a foreigner. She is new in the area. She's an outsider, and it may not be looked on too favorably by the people who are in the area that she's around and that she's doing this. So we see the kindness of Boaz as he provides for those who are his relatives. He recognizes that he has a responsibility to provide for not only Ruth, but especially for Naomi, I think, because they're close relatives, because he is a kinsman. And obviously we see the character of Ruth and that Boaz is drawn to her character, recognizes her character. So we have the stage set, right? Ruth and Boaz kind of been together a little bit. They're, you know, I wonder if they start to make googly eyes at each other just a little and different things like that. But Boaz recognizes Ruth's character in particular, all right? And he recognizes that there is a responsibility on his part to provide for family. So we realize, or we recognize, both that Ruth is, we start to see her excellent character, Naomi. She is still bereft of an heir. Remember, that's the major problem here. That's the major issue. And we see that Boaz, his character, Naomi's character as well, and also Ruth's, that she loves her mother-in-law and is a hard worker, apparently. So in chapter 3, things really start to cook in. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, shall I not seek security for you, that it may be well with you?" Now this is where the matchmaker mom comes in. She says, "Now is not Boaz our kinsman, with whose maids you were? Behold, he winnows barley at the threshing floor tonight." Just saying, that's where he's going to be, right? "Wash yourself, therefore, and anoint yourself, and put on your best clothes." Get all gussied up, all right? "Go down to the threshing floor, but don't make yourself known to the man until he's finished eating and drinking. It shall be, when he lies down, that you shall notice the place where he lies." By the way, this is a happy time, right? This is going to be a festive time, a time of rejoicing, because the harvest has come in. There's lots of food, and what do you do when there's lots of food? You party, right? So that's what's going on. There is much merrymaking. "It shall be, when he lies down, that you shall notice the place where he lies, and you shall go uncover his feet and lie down. Then he will tell you what you shall do." And he said to her, "All that you say, I will do." So she went down to the threshing floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law had commanded her. When Boaz had eaten and drunk, his heart was merry, and he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain. Seems like as good a place as any to sleep for the night. And she came secretly and uncovered his feet and lay down. Now, I know for 100% certain what would happen to my wife if I uncovered her feet in the middle of the night. She would wake up probably within 5 minutes. And so that's kind of the idea here. She gets him to wake up and she lays down. It happened in the middle of the night that the man was startled and bent forward. And behold, a woman was lying at his feet. That would probably startle most people if you had gone to sleep. And you kind of start to wake up sort of out of the grog because your feet are cold. And you sit up to put the blanket back over your feet. And oh, there's a lady lying there. There's a person there. He said, "Who are you?" I don't know if he's still kind of rubbing the sleep out of his eyes, or if he needed glasses, or exactly what, but it's probably dark, and she answers and says, "I'm Ruth, your maid. So spread your covering over your maid, for you are a close relative." What she's doing there is asking for a ring, right? She says, "Here, promise that you'll marry me." That's the proposition here. That's what she wants. She wants him to do this symbolic thing that's akin to us giving an engagement ring. Then he said, "May you be blessed of the Lord, my daughter. You have shown your last kindness to be better than the first by not going after young men, whether poor or rich. Now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you whatever you ask, and for all my people in the city, know that you are a woman of excellence. Now it is true, I am a close relative. However, there is a relative closer than I. Remain this night, and when morning comes, if he will redeem you, good, let him redeem you. But if he does not wish to redeem you, then I will redeem you as the Lord lives. Lie down until morning." So she lay at his feet until morning and rose before one could recognize another and said, "Let it not be known that the woman came to the threshing floor." And again he said, "Give me the cloak that is on you and hold it." So she held it, and he measured 6 measures of barley and laid it on her. And she went into the city. When she came to her mother-in-law, she said, "How did it go, my daughter?" And she told her all that the man had done for her. She said, "These 6 measures of barley he gave to me, for he said, 'Do not go to your mother-in-law empty-handed.'" Then she said, "Wait, my daughter, until you know how the matter turns out, for the man will not rest until he has settled it today." So we see here, it seems apparent that Ruth was a desirable woman. If not at least for her attractiveness, then certainly because of her character. It's very clear to everyone. Apparently she's a very hard worker, because it's very clear to everyone that her character is excellent, that she is a woman of excellence and a woman of excellent character. And Boaz is apparently glad that she has asked him to redeem her, to marry her, and to fill his position as a redeemer. But he says there are some things that need to be taken care of first. He said there's another one who has the first right to redeem you and to buy the land, to provide an heir for your husband, and to raise an heir. That's what's going to be taken care of in chapter 4. We also see something of Boaz's character. Naomi says, "Wait, my daughter, until you know how the matter turns out, for the man will not rest until he has settled it today." So he's a guy who gets things done. Now Boaz went up to the gate and sat down there, and behold, the close relative of whom Boaz spoke was passing by. So he said, "Turn aside, friend, sit down here." And he turned aside and sat down. He took 10 men of the elders of the city and said, "Sit down here." So they sat down. And when he said to the closest relative, "Naomi, who has come back from the land of Moab, has to sell the piece of land which belonged to our brother Elimelech. So I thought to inform you, saying, 'Buy it before those who are sitting here and before the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, redeem it. If not, tell me that I may know, for there is no one but you to redeem it, and I am after you.'" And he said, "I will redeem it." So the guy says, "Okay, I'll buy the land." And it would have been a common thing. You would buy the land to keep the land again in the family, so that your family continues to experience, take part in the blessing that the Lord has promised. Then Boaz said, now there's a catch, all right? Boaz said, "On the day you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you must also acquire Ruth the Moabitess, the widow of the deceased, in order to raise up the name of the deceased on his inheritance." And the closest relative said, "I cannot redeem it for myself, because I would jeopardize my own inheritance." He says, that's not going to work. I can't provide for a whole other family. It'll mess up the things that I have going on. If it were just the land, that would be one thing. Great, I can take it and I can use it, and we can go from there. But that's more than I can handle. So he says, "Redeem it for yourself. You may have my right of redemption, for I cannot redeem it." Now this was the custom in former times in Israel concerning the redemption and exchange of land to confirm any matter. A man removed his sandal and gave it to another. And this was the manner of attestation in Israel. So this is how this is the signing of a contract, essentially, is the guy took off his shoe and gave it to the other guy. It's, you know, it's no signing of a contract, but, you know, that's the basic idea of what's happened. The closest relative said to Boaz, "Buy it for yourself," and he removed his sandal. Then Boaz said to the elders and all the people, "You are witnesses today that I have bought from the hand of Naomi all that belonged to Elimelech and all that belonged to Chilion and Mahlon. Moreover, I have acquired Ruth the Moabitess, the widow of Mahlon, to be my wife in order to raise up the name of the deceased on his inheritance, so that the name of the deceased may not be cut off from his brothers or from the court of his birthplace. You are witnesses today." So you see something of the importance of passing on the family name here and the family inheritance. All the people who are in the court and the elders said, "We are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, both of whom built the house of Israel. And may you achieve wealth in Ephrathah and become famous in Bethlehem. Moreover, may your house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah, though the through the offspring which the Lord shall give to you by this young woman. So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. He went in to her, and the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. Then the woman said to Naomi, "Blessed is the Lord who has not left you without a redeemer today." So we've come full circle. Who was redeemed? Naomi, right? She is the one who has received this redemption. May his name become famous in Israel. May he also be to you a restorer of life and a sustainer of your old age. For your daughter-in-law who loves you and is better to you than seven sons has given birth to him. Then Naomi took the child and laid him on her lap. That was an indication that she was taking the child in, that heirship and all of that went through this child, and became his nurse. And the neighbor women gave him a name, saying, "A son has been born to Naomi." So here's where the twist really, really happens. All right? You've read the story. We've come to the climax. Yay! Naomi's been redeemed. And here's the kicker. They've given him a name, and they've named him Obed. And if you're Jewish and you hear the name Obed, immediately you think the name Jesse, and then David. He is the father of Jesse, the father of David. Now these are the generations of Perez. Perez was born to Hezron. Hezron was born to Ram. Ram to Amminadab. And Amminadab was born to Nahshon. And Nahshon, Salmon. And Salmon was born Boaz. Boaz, Obed. And Obed was born Jesse. And to Jesse, David. That's a shocker of an ending, right? We see suddenly that God has used all of these events to bring forth the birth of his king, and ultimately the birth of the king. So what have we seen in the book of Ruth? We'll quickly run through these. There are some major themes here. First, we see the sovereignty of God, right? We see the obstacles laid out early on. They're out of the land. The men, Naomi's sons, take Gentile wives. She is beyond hope of children and heirs, right? But God acts on a regular basis. In chapter 1, verse 6, why does Naomi come back to the land of Israel? Because God had visited the people in Israel with food, right? She receives a converted daughter-in-law. Your God will be my God. Where you go, I will go, and your God will be my God. And look in verse 13 of chapter 4. It is the Lord who enables Ruth to conceive. So it is God who is at work in all of these things. He takes action. He overcomes each of these obstacles. And God is sovereignly at work. We also see a number of answers to prayer. Do you notice how many times, may the Lord do this, or may the Lord bless this person, or may the Lord provide this, may the Lord do that? And it happens at every turn. God answers those prayers at every turn. And in all that, we see the providence of God in human affairs. Ruth just happened, right, to glean in Boaz's field. But everyone understands that it's by God's providence that this happens. We have godly individuals. Do you notice how each person at the very forefront, each character at the very forefront of his mind is the Lord and the Lord's action and the Lord's providence? Redemption, obviously, was key. Like I said, that word close relative or relative and redeemer, all of those are related ideas. And Boaz was the one who had the relationship and was in a position to provide for what they needed. And Naomi ultimately is provided for. And here's where the purpose really comes in. What we see at the very end of the book is that God has used his providence, his sovereignty over all things to bring about the birth of David, his king. So we see God in control. In the book of Ruth, we see a living, breathing example of what the excellent woman looks like. We see a man in Boaz, who is a godly man. He is a man who is providing for family, for kin. And we see a whole bunch of characters who understand God's hand in providence and what's going on. We see that God is at work to accomplish his purposes in all of history. And we ultimately see a pretty sweet picture of the Redeemer that Christ would be, who gave his life to provide the redemption that was necessary for us. So there is the book of Ruth and the godly woman that is Naomi and her redemption. Let's pray. Father, we thank you so much for the fact that you are in control of history, that you oversee what happens, that you have sovereignly worked your plan from the very beginning. Lord, thank you so much that we can trust you and trust that you are in control of every situation that you bring into our lives, that you are in control of all of those situations, even those that look the most dire, to bring about your purpose in the world and to bring about our good. Lord, we thank you so much for the story of Ruth, especially the fact that through Ruth and Naomi and Boaz, you saw fit to bring forth your King David, and through David, our Messiah, the one who gave his life for us and who will reign forever, your son. We pray in his name. Amen.